Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Gig Fighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are at the most efficient way to get the show, enter Warman Kick Fighting Show into the iTunes search engine, and the show pops right up. So, some news coming up. There's a really big chance that my podcast would be added to a much larger, hosting opportunity. I've been working with, talking to a friend of mine in the business, TG DeSantis. He had mentioned that there was a way for me to be a part of a program that does a lot of podcasts, so just so you guys know, I'll let you know in advance before that happens. Also, you'll notice that this is $22.99 as far as episodes go. The reason why that is of course, those of you who have been with the podcast for a really long time, you guys know that I've done way more than 300 episodes. But for iTunes, I wanted to do something special. I wanted to have 300 be something that kind of like a gift type episode where I revisit some things and really talk about a lot. So I was like, man, I really wanted to do that podcast, but so much has been going on in the last few weeks in kickboxing. I just had to put it off until I give it its own platform. So I'm thinking Monday I'm going to post that. You know, you're kind of a gift for those in the States, Thanksgiving, for those in the rest of the world. Just another cool day to have a lot of kickboxing content. And maybe that'll be the day that I join the new hosting site. It'll still, everything will be the same. Like, there's nothing you have to do to get to the podcast, any different, except for when I do my intro, it'll probably add the new form that I'm on as well. So it'd be an added way to join the party. So I want to thank everybody for following me and being with me all this time in kickboxing. I apologize for the break recently just because I've been working so many fights. A lot of you guys know that I coach fighters as well. But normally it's just like one fight a weekend, but lately I've been doing, Fridays and Saturdays, and there was a week where I did Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I just been super busy, and I'm proud of my fighters because they're having a lot of success lately. But I'm grateful to get into the kickboxing action full, because man, is there a lot of kickboxing action to talk about. So I'll go ahead and just start going through the cards. I've missed some things, like I said before, so I will revisit some things that I probably would have talked about had I done the podcast there a week. So I'll go ahead and go to one. I've got several cards from one to talk about. Going to go to their Tokyo, Japan card. It's the two fights I'm going to talk about, of course, in this card are the stand-up fights. And Ratong Jitmongnan, and then his fight with Walter Gonçalves. Walter really brought the fight. He brought an exciting brand of fighting. And the biggest thing is he realized with Ratong is probably the most exciting full rules Muay Thai fighter on the planet in terms of like the all action style. You know what I'm saying? Not necessarily the best full rules Muay Thai fighter on the planet, but as far as action goes, you want to see this guy fight. He has no problem getting in exchanges. He wants to battle in every possible area. He is not your get up on the cards. Like I remember Sayak back in the day. I remember Sayak, I'd be like, man, how come he gets so many international opportunities? Because Sayak almost never put his foot on the gas. He usually fought at the same pace for a really long time, played the game, but he kept getting big opportunities. Whereas Bukau, he was just the perfect balance of both. Bukau was a good balance of landing good Muay Thai, techniques, but also being cool enough to get into some exchanges, whether to his detriment or not. So you'll look in his history and you'll say, okay, he really played the game when he went against Kozo Takada. And then you look at a fight with round four of Yoshihiro Sato, and then he's just blasting away. Just go out there throwing punches. He even got caught pretty good there towards the end of the round after they were just beating each other up. But he was a perfect blend of both. Ratong is also a guy who can play the game, but his tendency is to just go bring the war. And that's why I think so many people love him. This was a split decision that could have gone either way, just depending upon the rounds that you scored it. I think I liked Walter Gonçalves I felt like he won one clear. And then I thought I liked him in two, and I thought that Ratong really took over 3, 4, 5. I thought that Walter just couldn't get into the offensive flow that he had earlier in the fight, but really an all-action fight of the year contender. Definitely want to sit down and watch Ratong and Walter. Ratong retains his flyweight title. I'm pretty sure he was retaining it. I thought he won it earlier. But yeah, he is your flyweight champion. The other fight, of course, is George Petrosian beating Sami Sanna by unanimous decision to win the $1 million and the Featherweight Grand Prix. You know, the easy narrative of this fight, of course, because if you know the history of these fights, if you know the history of this tournament, the thing that we wanted to have happen clearly in the tournament was we wanted to have Yotsen Kai, and we wanted to have him fight. And again, everybody's different, but I thought the big goal to it when the whole tournament was put together, I was like, man, I'm really excited that there's a chance that Yotsen Kai and Petrosian are going to fight. Even though I don't think that Yotsen Kai is what he used to be, he's still a really good fighter, and he's still put on a tremendous run, you know, recently. But just, you know how this game works. You know, it's not always it's not always the best person that comes out or the best fight that ends up at the end of the tournament. It can happen, but it doesn't always happen. So in this particular situation, I remember thinking to myself, you know, I really hope that no injuries happen. I really hope that, you know, the right matchups happen. And then we get just the most crazy set of circumstances to lead us to where we are. We get to this situation where Petrosian and Yotsen Kai are out of the first round. So now we've got a tournament with guys who are like, okay, this isn't what any of us saw coming. So now these guys are both out of the tournament. And then we go from them both being out of the tournament to something happening where Petrosian announces that he goes to his Facebook and says that the illegal techniques that were used in the fight by Petr Markot, those are the reasons why they're calling this a no contest and they're restarting it. And then you have the owner come out, or the guy running it comes out, and he says, no, that's not why. We don't know where anybody got that from. The real reason why is Petr Markot won by Muay Thai rules, and Petrosian won by what we would call, you know, kickboxing rules, and the fight was kickboxing, so he should have won, so we're going to do it again. And when that first happened, I was like, man, you know, we're all joking. Petr Markot, go out there. You know, he said he's not going to fight. We knew it was about money, and then the money came up, and then he made the fight happen. So then Petrosian's back in the tournament. Petrosian goes ahead and dominates the rest of the tournament, and he wins $1 million. But from an outside view, it almost looks like this is the guy we want to win. He didn't win. We worked something out to get him back in the tournament, and now he's won the fight. Even if you want to put that narrative to it, Petrosian is really, really good. He's an all-time great, and he probably would have won this thing anyway. So this guy is freaking special. It's unfortunate, and I had him winning that first fight, but he is so skilled, and he has been more aggressive. I think maybe as he gets more confidence that his hands aren't going to break every fight, because that was a big problem for him early in his career. He is a really, really special talent, a once-in-a-generation type of talent. He's really, really good. So him winning at the end of all this is still really, really cool. So do not take that away from this guy, no matter what you feel about how things went as far as results and how things went as far as, you know, the fights and fairness and, you know, all that stuff is legit. People are legit okay to be upset about those things. I have no problem with that. But definitely give the guy his due, because talent is not in question. Skill is not in question. Scoring effective offense in every round is not in question. He's probably better at it now than he was in his prime, because he's so much more aggressive. That dude is freaking good, so give him his due. Going to go to another card. This one is a card that had a little bit of controversy, just kind of depending upon who, you know, what view you're from, but I definitely thought it did. The ONE Championship Age of Dragons card had a lot of fun fights in it, a lot of fun results, and a little bit of controversy in the women's game. Going to go ahead and go through it. So first of all, we have some old school. Always fun to have some old school on the card. I will start off with Enrico Kiel as he gets a victory over Armin Petrosian. Armin Petrosian is a talented guy. You know, it's not that he is unskilled. That's for sure. And of course, it is always going to be weird if your brother is, you know, that talented and you do the same sport. You know what I'm saying? Manny Pacquiao has a brother named Bobby Pacquiao who boxed. No one talks about Bobby Pacquiao. It's just how it is. You know, it's just this. There's a long history of this. You always Canelo Alvarez. You'll hear that he had an older brother that boxed before him. No one knows that the older about that guy. You know, if you are connected to someone that's great, that's a really, really difficult situation. You know, it can be. But Armin really did put together a good career for himself, has some really good wins. He fought a lot of elite guys. Things that will hurt him, of course, is the fact that a lot of his run happened without a lot of eyes seeing him. He fought in Italy a lot. Sometimes they had some matchups and some decisions that went his way when it shouldn't have. But he's not unskilled. Enter Enrico Kale, another guy who's been in this game for a long time. Bacal had, you know, the whole controversy with him, you know, a few years ago where there was the K-1 World Grand Prix. They tried to put it back together, and it ended up being him and Bacal. And then Bacal's people found out in advance that if they didn't win by KO, that it was going to go to an extra round, and he wasn't going to win a decision. So after Bacal fights for 3 rounds against Enrico Kale, he thinks that he's won. He literally leaves before the decision is made. He's like, I want to let the crowd decide who they feel that they thought won the fight. Just so many shady things. Well, Kyle's one of the more interesting people ever in this sport. As far as management, people around him, how things went, you can't script a career like that. And part of that had Enrico Kale in that story. Enrico Kale did great things in Germany, had some really good, you know, in the German fight scene and in the various places and opportunities he got to fight in Europe. He put together a really good resume. He had some really good fights. He's good. He goes up there. He gets a TKO in round 2. Talented guy. Older. Not what he used to be. But doesn't mean he's not good. And that's very, very important. So shout out there. Let me see what else we have here. There were a couple of MMA fights. I'm focusing more on the stand-up game. So no offense to those who are looking for MMA action. Christina Brau gets a victory over Urena Bears. So for me, it's interesting that they went with this weight class, you know, because Urena Bears is a good-sized girl. Like, she's good size. And it's hard to believe that once upon a time she fought at 35, 45, you know. So now she's fighting at 155 pounds. So it means that she doesn't have that much of a cut. She gets to stay the good-sized, you know, athlete, you know, that she is because she's tall, too. Christina Brower, also good-sized, thicker. I thought the cleaner scores and the consistent scores came from Urena Bears, and then also I thought that she scored a knockdown. I thought that hook was a clear, you went down because of the shot, score. I did have her winning. Now, I won't say that there's no argument for Christina having good work in some of the rounds, but I will say that if you were to ask me who I thought won this fight, I would say that I had a stronger argument for Urena Bears scoring more effective clean offense throughout. But shout out to Christina. By winning this fight, she makes herself a player. She makes herself someone that people are going to pay attention to and talk about. And that's what we want in this game. We want more. So now you've got someone who beat Urena Bears, who hasn't lost in a really, really long time. And so now the whole industry wonders, you know, will Urena Bears get the treatment that we got from our Bars, will she get the treatment that Petrosian got? Will they relook at her fight? Will they make a decision there? No title on the line, no tournament. I can see this just being a good stand-up fight that they, you know, had. And it's tough for Urena because she signed with ONE so long ago, and it took her this long to get a fight. You know, I felt like she posted that she, you know, signed with them like back in like April, it seems like. It seemed like it was a long time ago. So she gets the opportunity. She goes out there. Performance is all right. Looks like she scored a knockdown. Cards didn't go her way. And it's just unfortunate. She's been plugging away. She's been one of the better fighters in the women's game for a long time. But, man, that's the game. Wins and losses are the game. And sometimes, even when you think that you did your thing on the scorecards, it doesn't go your way. You just got to dust yourself off and get back in there. As for Christina, she's got to build on this. It would probably be better for her to get a different fighter. But, unfortunately, because they chose to do 155-pound girls, they now have to find enough girls to develop a weight class. Like, you've got to have a roster for people to follow, or else it's just going to be, look who's fighting. You got to have a roster so people can get behind it. So I'm curious to see who they go out there and find at 155 pounds to develop, you know, because that's, I mean, it's 70 kgs for women, you know, it's just around there. So it's like, it's, I'm curious to see who they put together to make this happen. Jamal Yusupov gets a KO victory over Jochen Clyde Fairtex. Just put together some really mean offense with the hands Jochen Clyde caught coming in. So the question has come up, and this is something that's been on the Twitter, you know, on the Twitter. I like to call it like that because it makes me feel like I'm old. On the Twitter. So the question that comes up when you see this is, what does it say about Jochen Clyde and where he is? He has now lost two in a row, which is a super rare thing to happen in the Jochen Clyde career. And this is his worst stint since, you know, the days where he had lost. There was a period of time where he'd lost like 4 of 6 or something like that, whatever. You saw the wear coming. And the worse than the wear, you saw the desire to. When I was there in Thailand, Jochen Clyde was past training hard. like he had already made his money. He had already done well from the Contender Asia show. He had some other opportunities. He bought the gym. He bought his mom a house. Like, he did all the things that he wanted to do. So the joke there was, you know, when I talked to Teddy Ong, who was running at the time, he was running that Fairtex facility. He said, "Man, I was telling him, like, yo, man, you got to train." It was before he's going against Jiang Wei Par again. He goes, "If you don't win by KO, you're going to lose because they are bringing you out to lose to Jiang Wei Par." That's how they felt, because he had beaten Jiang Wei several times. And in that fight, I still thought that he won 4 or 5 rounds. But sure enough, he didn't win by stoppage, and he did not get the decision. But they said that before the fight happened. But the mentality of what he did to train and what he did for preparation, it seemed like it left him. Then all of a sudden, you saw this huge commitment from him. All of a sudden, he's got abs, he's ripped up, he's fighting at 70 kgs. Before he made his run, I'd say at 72.5, and, you know, around, you know, 160, I'd say is where Jochen Clyde made most of his history, is around that weight class. So he went out there, did great stuff, not to exclude what he did in the stadiums. I'm talking about what he did as far as his international run. That was at a bigger weight. Stadium, I think he was 141 champion. So, like, he did a, or 140-ish champion. He did a good job fighting and competing at that one, you know, 72.5 kg mark. And then all of a sudden, as I mentioned before, he just had this run where it's like, I think he even discovered CrossFit or something, but all of a sudden his abs were great. He was out there killing guys. He had, like, from like 2012 to earlier this year, I don't think he'd lost. I think he won like 14, 15, 16 in a row, it felt like. He had some great runs. But then earlier this year with Sami Sana, who he's beaten recently, he looked like the guy who fought in Thai Fight, who didn't care that you were trying to hit him, and just went after you and tried to kill you. And that was the last time I saw him get stopped. And he went out there in Thai Fight in Japan and just brought a reckless, "I'm going to try to kill you," and he ran into shots and he got stopped. Here, same thing. Just maybe his instinct when he's hurt is to keep pushing and not to play the game. Because literally, if Jochen Clyde wants, he can just rip body kicks and not throw a single punch and beat 99% of the world, it feels like. He's really, really good. So, and that's 99% of the fight world, not 99% of the world. He is really good if he plays it slow and just looks to play off of his right hook and his left body kick. He can do that. But I felt like in this one, after things weren't going his way, he kept them not going his way. Just kept, you know, rushing in, looking for offense, got caught in between. And Jamal Yusupov, here's the thing that should be noted about it. It's not like I feel like I'm seeing a guy who's the future. It's not like Jochen Clyde lost to, you know, Kashinko. You know what I'm saying? This guy is, you know, a good, talented guy, but he's got a lot to do as far as building his resume, and he's got some losses. And I don't feel like he's beating Jochen Clyde and then taking the mantle to become an elite fighter himself. We'll see if it happens, but nothing in me sees it at this point. I think that he's just a guy who got an upset, and the bigger question isn't that, you know, what does Jamal do with this? Because I'm curious to see that too. But I don't think that's the biggest question. The biggest question is, what is left of Jochen Clyde, who's got all the wear, all the run, was, like I said, crazy training for a little bit, not crazy training right now. You know, like, everything's a little bit different. But he's still a super talent. I still want to see him fight. He's still one of my favorite people in the fight game. Anytime Jochen Clyde's on form and letting it go, he's awesome. So I want to see him. But that's the game. There's going to be periods of time where you just run into the better man on that night. And that's what happened to Yost and Fairtex. Roman quickly gets a TKO victory over Tariq Kababez. Tariq is a talent. He's got some good skill to him. But Roman Crickley is just one of the best in the world. That guy's good. He's really, really good. Good length, good offense. Able to put together a series to get Tariq out of there. And the question is, how do they build on this now? Because Roman is good. And they've got some good, you know, heavyweights out there that Kunlun had under their roster. And I'm assuming they're going to try to sign up them, like these two gentlemen. They're going to try to sign them up and build a weight class. But the problem is, if you don't give the people more of a map, they won't know why or what's significant in the win. They need to know, okay, this is important because this person beat this person and this person beat this person, and now these two people are fighting. Like, people need more of a map. You can do tournaments without having a tournament. So if I were to do a 16-man tournament, I could just match certain people together, and then the next round do a certain set of matchups. And I'm doing the same thing as a tournament bracket. I'm just not forming it aloud. And then that way, I can have, by the time I choose to bring a title out, I've now got a guy over here who's won under my promotion four times, and a guy under here who's won under my promotion four times. That means these two guys are going to fight each other, and you've seen the progression. But if you just say, my title is the thing to watch, see who of these two guys who won the title, it isn't as intriguing to a regular watching audience. There's no map there. Like, they want to know what gets us there. So, and again, it doesn't have to be stated, but they need to know that there is a way that got us to this title. So, as Crickley is now champion, I don't know if they want to do a contenders tournament. Maybe they have a four-man tournament one night. But something to let people know, these are the athletes that are leading us towards this opportunity. Last, we're going to talk about Ilias Inahashi, or Inach. Ilias, of course, the Dutch fighter who, Moroccan Dutch fighter, who is a super talent. He takes on Wang Wafang, and he wins by split decision in a very, very good fight. Ilias is good. Wang, good. They put on a good fight. They put on a close fight. But Ilias is just an all-action guy who I can watch any day of the week. That guy's good. He is the kind of talent that gets people behind, you know, you're already excited about the brand. You know, you're already excited about who the best kickboxers in the world are, or excuse me, you know, like who the best fighters are. And you're excited about the weight class because they really do have some talented guys in the smaller weight divisions. Right now, unchallenged, unchallenged, I don't care. I mean, I'm sure there's always going to be someone who's going to be like, but what about blank? Unchallenged, K1 is killing it in the smaller weight classes. They just got better guys. They got better talent there. This is without doubt. The thing that I think that people should, you know, note is if ever there are so many good fighters that we can still build a weight class for different organizations. You just have to have a little bit more of a map. Ilias winning over Wang is proof that there is so much talent out there that even though K1 has the most small guy talent, they don't have all of them. So I'm excited to see what happens moving forward and how they build the weight class. Because right now, it's just, I see Ilias is fighting, and I'm waiting for his videos to pop up online. Because we need a little bit more to get into the weight class. But good stuff there. Good stuff. Ilias wins and moves forward as your champion. K1 Crush had an event on 107. K1 Crush Fight 107. I'm going to go ahead and talk about the main event as Junki Sasaki defeats Takashi Koki 30-28 on two cards, 29-28 on the last one, unanimous decision. Koki was champion for a while, doing his thing for a while. Sasaki came in there, pulls off a legit victory, one of the better victories of his career, probably the best victory of his career, to take the Crush title, bantamweight title. I am really curious to see where this goes. I don't know if it means that Junkie's going to have a sustained run, but man, that's a big time win to build off of. He is a talent. I want to know where this is going. You know what I'm saying? And again, because, you know, there's they use the weight class, and they have a lot of opportunities thanks to K1 and Crush and that. Man, he's going to get the opportunity to build his brand. So if he's legit, if this is a legit win, hopefully, if I'm him, I'm not trying to run it back. You know, he gets victory over Koki. Don't try to run it back. Try to get a couple of fights. Get those wins, and then maybe go against Koki again down the road to prove that it was legit. But first things first, now that you're champ, you got to build your brand as a champ. Teo Asahisa gets a victory over Noifumi Nishimoto by knockout, second round. Teo is a guy I've seen on the fight before. I'm ready to see what it looks like when you get a little bit different opposition or a little bit tougher opposition. So maybe he could start getting some, you know, or maybe there should be some more serious runs, you know, in K1 there. But, again, I just want to see more. Hikaru Terashima gets a victory over Kwon Ki Seo by split decision. Takehito Nimi gets a victory over Tenma Sanu by majority decision. Takahiro defeats Riku Murasaki. Takahiro, talented. I want to see more from her. Let's move forward. Haven't seen enough to really make a great assessment, and I wasn't able to see all these fights. A lot of this stuff I kind of saw in clips, but I wanted to take the time to mention the K1 winners. Also, Hikaru Hasumi gets a victory over Kazumasa Sakakawa, and then Ryuka gets a victory over Virginia by unanimous decision. And then the last, let me see, I don't need to do the whole card, I think I did most of them. But the Crush event, as always, good fights, good brand. I mean, good, you know, Crookin Hall, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like Crookin Hall and the combat sports events that it has run through it. But just really, really good stuff. And, always excited to see the athletes and how well they do. It's one of the important reasons why kickboxing is what it is. You know, it's having that venue and the different events that's gone through there, whether K1, whether, you know, Crush, they do a great job, and they usually fill that place up because it's more intimate and smaller. But I don't think there's anything like Crookin Hall in the world. Like, I think it stands alone in terms of combat sports, and that's everything. Shoot, you could throw professional wrestling in there. They do such a great job of putting events in that venue. Whoever owns that has, you know, probably Yakuza, but they've done such a great job of putting consistent fights on for a very long time. I'm going to go ahead and go to a K1 card that I didn't get the, I talked about K1, the Glory card that I didn't get to break down because I've been, you know, just like I said, busy doing my thing. So I'm going to go ahead and revisit it. Said Ahamada gets a victory over Yoan Mormex by unanimous decision. Anil Angerville gets a victory over Maria Lobo. Very important here. Anali. This is very important. We need more female fighters to emerge. This win over Maria Lobo, who's got good history, who's got some good wins, got a victory over Maude Barlow back in the day. She's in her hometown, but, like, she's got a strong kickboxing, you know, base, and she does good stuff. Anale Angerville getting the victory here is huge. So definitely want to see where that takes her. Cedric Doe gets a victory by TKO knockdown over Mehdi Kata. Just got the ball rolling and didn't slow it down. Very, very good by Cedric Doe. Want to see more of him. Tong Fairtex gets a victory over Masaya Kubo. Kubo has been game. He's been fighting some of the best fighters in the world. He's been fighting tough. He's just been fighting guys that are too tough, like that are just got really, really good skill. And Tong Fairtex, left leg cracking as usual, movement, doesn't get in a lot of exchanges, plays it clean. He's going to be one of those guys who can talk to his kids clear when he's done with this thing. Left leg lets it go, finds his straight punches here and there, but really just the subtle movements, the speed and power of the left leg, and then just the ability to neutralize the returning offense by kicking your arms and keeping you from battling back. Finding a shot under the body that slows you down, and then tying up at the right time. Tong Fairtex, he's got the classic tie, the other tie style that I was referring to before. He plays the game. Muhammad Hendoff gets a victory over Garrick Ballet by split decision. Ballet has all the tools to be really, really good in this game, but this one didn't go his way. Muhammad Hendoff, it was a close fight, competitive fight. You saw this skill from Muhammad. A split decision, of course. I'm fine with Muhammad winning the fight. Garrick Ballet, I could see an argument for you, but man, Muhammad did some good stuff. That dude can kickbox. He's good talent. I want to see more from him down the road. Jamie Bates defeats Zadit Hadok. Jamie Bates is good. Like, he's got good, clean boxing. He's got this subtle movement where he can neutralize you by tying up or by stepping to the outside. He's got a good understanding of range. Bates is good, and he's on a roll. He's been winning lately. I want to see more of Bates as he continues to progress up the rankings. That dude's good. Matej Panaz gets a victory over Yusin Agan. Yusin Agan isn't a bad fighter, but his glory run has not been what he desires. It's just sometimes the guys in front of you, but he's going against some of the tough, you know what I'm saying? And you know, in terms of, you know, the level of opposition that he's gone against in glory has been really, really high. And so there's no shame in... sometimes it doesn't go your way, you know, and it's a tough game, and he's still out there, game going against elite guys, and I'm excited to see more from him down the road. So, good stuff there. You know, just in defeat, good stuff. And as far as Matej Panaz, you've got skill. You've got skill, you've got talent, you've got stoppage ability, you've got to build on a KO. Anytime a fighter fights on a huge, on a big stage, and they win by KO, you got to build on it. I don't care if it's, you know, top-ranked boxing, like kickboxing, UFC, whatever it is, when you get a KO, the best thing towards your brand is to have the performance right after the KO be better than that performance. And the reason why that's important is because it tells people that there's reason to keep watching you. They get a KO, they're like, oh, I'm tune in. I watched that guy win by KO. That was pretty insane. So you tune in because you want to see more of it. And the more you tune in, the more you realize this person's legit. That second performance is the thing that keeps them. So good job, Matej Panaz, and we will see them. Now, he's fought for glory before, but I'm saying when you get a win off by KO, that's the thing that gets the people to follow. Nurdin Mehedin gets a victory over Kirill Kornilov. Split decision there. Both guys aren't the biggest of heavyweights, you know. I think both of them could probably, you know, if they wanted to, have consistent runs at light heavyweight. But you see the skill. Nordine's fun guy to watch. Follow his Instagram. You know, he's a good, talented, quick, fast heavyweight. Does some good things. Split decision, I was fine with the winner. I thought it was a fun fight. You know, just... there's some sloppiness at times because of the heavyweight division that happens, but Nordine really showed some good talent. Kirill, we've seen fight before. He is good. Nordine gets the victory and moves forward. Bruno Gazzani makes his glory debut against Michel Palandre, and he beats him by split decision, and Gazzani is the truth. I am a fan of him because he's a strong guy. He throws in combinations, and he does not allow the dead space. Like, he walks right into it. So when you throw offense, he's so mean in those spots that you're like, okay, I don't know if I can play combination kick with this guy. He is good. I like his talent. He will be back in that glory ring and coming up in China. But this is a dude to pay attention to. This Brazilian fighter is good. Shout out to WCK doing all their great work down there. WCK is probably one of the best kickboxing organizations in the world. They produce so many good talents. Alex Pereira's from there. We've got so much talent coming that our way from that organization. They do good stuff. Bruno going out there, letting his hands go, scoring big. Shout out to Bruno Gazzani. Good stuff. As far as Michel Palandre, still a good fighter. You are just in the toughest division. You know, it's such a tough division that it's almost like you think, man, five people just won. You just won four or five fights in a row. Now you're in the conversation to be in the conversation to fight for the title. That's how deep 70 kgs is. It'll always be that deep. It is one of the premier weight classes in kickboxing. So Bruno getting his work in there is really, really good. He moves forward. Zachariah Zoghri gets a victory over Abdullah Esbiri. This is one of my favorite fights to watch because first you see the skill from both, but Zachariah Zelgari, if there's one thing that you will say, I can say for him, is not it's not so much that he's just an entertaining fighter, but he's a game fighter that's gonna battle back. And he had this interesting series in the fight, which will, you know, be the most memorable thing of the whole card, where he is exchanging and he's taking offense like usual. He's giving offense and he's taking offense. He backs into the corner and Asbury just lets on this onslaught of offense. And Zachariah Zugri just spins his whole time, like moving his head and rolling with it. And, you know, some of the shots are landing, but he's just playing it like he's this boxer. You know what I'm saying? Like he's playing it like he's, you know, Ali or Mayweather in the corner, just letting you throw. And he's just kind of moving and moving and moving, you know, just doing his way. Now, he's not the cleanest at it, so he's still getting hit here and there. But he showed how much he was so confident that I'm not getting hit, I'm not getting hurt. When the series is over with, he goes out there, and now you're out, okay, you probably lost a round thanks to that. He then goes out there and just starts fighting mean. He lands huge shots, scores a knockdown to get Asbury in trouble. They get back up, and then he gets Asbury out of there on the second knockdown with shots. Zachariah Zugri is one of the most entertaining fighters on the planet, period. Period. This guy brings it. He brought it when he fought in shootboxing. He brought it when he fought in Infusion. He brings it when he fights here. This guy is good. He is not normal. He is good. He is such a talent. So I'm excited to see what happens to him moving forward. We have him and Ace of Tempao set up for Collision. Just a fun fight card. Really, really good stuff. I'm excited to see where he goes from here. Next up is Donovan Weiss as he goes against Jason Wilnes. Donovan Weiss is a super talented guy who needed to have this win to prove that he was the contender that he's capable of being. He had big wins before, but this one right here over an ex-contender is just absolutely perfect. This fight between Jason Wilnes and Donovan Weiss is what I would say. If you say, hey, what's kickboxing? I think this is one of the fights that you put on. It is the sport at the highest level. Clean combinations and kicks, belief in your ability to stay in the pocket, belief in your ability to avoid shots and still land shots without exiting exchanges, belief in your ability to start and finish combinations, belief in your ability to receive offense and come back with offense. It was the sport at its best. Donovan Weiss put on an absolutely beautiful performance, and in defeat, Jason Wilnes put on a beautiful performance. They really did a great job. Donovan scored more clear from, you know, in the rounds, 29-28 on some of the cards. But the story of this fight, the two stories. First story, Donovan Weiss continues to beat the elite guys, ex-champions. He's now put himself in position to go against Alex Pereira early next year, depending upon what happens in Alex's next fight as he defends his title in Collision. So we've got that. But then the biggest thing that I would say about this in the long scale of kickboxing is if someone sits down and says, hey, what should I watch if I've never seen kickboxing before? Put on this fight because they were absolutely clean and beautiful. Beautiful work. Mirtha Grunhart defeats Troy Jones but knockout in the second round of a, you know, short notice opportunity for Troy Jones. Troy Jones had been on a tear in his glory run. He had just won by KO 2 weeks before it. He gets 2 weeks of a break, and the next thing you know, he gets the call to fight for the title, and he jumps up and he takes it for the interim shot. Troy Jones was winning this fight until the knockout shot. He was doing a great job of being first. He had Grunhart hurt with the low kicks. He was scoring well. Grunhart, as usual, moving around, pacing, stalking, looking for his moment, trying to score in between, trying to score his power flurries. That's how he is. Grunhart doesn't always win all the rounds in his fights. Sometimes he just plays the game, finds his moments, and then he gets you out of there because that's what he does. He's one of the all-time great stoppers in this sport as far as getting KO stoppages. If you had an all-time team in kickboxing, especially in my last 20 years of watching kickboxing, if you had an all-time team, he's got to be on that team. There's no excuse whatsoever for someone to not have Mirtha Grunhart on that list. He can get you out of there. He is an exceptional talent. Jones, again, doing great. Everything was working, but just all of a sudden in the middle of the exchange, they're throwing with each other. Grunhart beats him to the shot, gets Jones in trouble. Jones gets up. Grunhart Grunhardt knows that he's got him hurt. He's used to this. He's done it a billion times. He goes in, you know, shark in the water, and he's able to get the stoppage over Troy Jones in the corner. Grunhardt gets the victory, sets up the fight that was supposed to happen on this card with Cedric Doumbé, and they both move forward. So really good, exciting stuff. I mean, I'm happy that this card came together. I'm happy that, you know, the fights that took place, and I'm happy winners and losers. You know what I'm saying? It was a really good card. Jones would be fine. Jones got to this title. Jones had his debut glory fight last year in March. That was his first fight. So from March of 2018 to October of 2019, he won in a tear and he put himself in position to fight for a title. He's going to be fine. He'll be back in the picture. He's going to stay in the picture. He's a very, very talented guy. But Grunhardt got the victory that night. So winners and losers. You know, Jason Holness, he's been champion before. He fought for the title earlier this year. He put on an absolute epic fight that I think that if people want to see the sport at its best, you got to watch this fight. It's one of my fights of the year. And it didn't bring the drama that you would have in, oh, man, somebody might die. That when I talk about Devin Townsend fight that I was talking about earlier. Like, it's not that style of fight in terms of both guys are trying to kill each other. It's the style of fight where people are just dominant, you know, determined to land clean, powerful, effective offense right in front of people. That's what you got from that. It's a really, really good card. So I'm going to go ahead and bring up a couple of things on Twitter. That's a segment that I'm going to start doing more often because it's coming up. People are asking me questions about things on Twitter, and they'll ask me for my comments on things. So I'm going to take the time to revisit some of the ones that came up. First of all, I want to give some love to Conda, also known as 8 Ulysses, 8 U-L-Y-S-S-E. I did not know that Murad Sari won Lumpini in 1999. I didn't know that. I've been watching kickboxing for a long time. I didn't know that. I thought the first Frenchman to win a international Muay Thai, or excuse me, to win a stadium title at his weight class, I thought it was Damian Alamo. So I did not know that. So shout out to him. Appreciate him bringing that to my attention. Let's go ahead and go back to, let's see, we have a couple of things that came up. Here's the biggest thing that came up. The question of where does Tenshin Nasukawa rank right now? Someone had brought up something that is coming your way, our way. Someone brought up who is the fighter of the decade, you know? So we'll say from 2010 to 99. Like, that's who's the fighter of the decade. And, or excuse me, 19. So the Tenshin Nasukawa came up. And they asked that question, and I kindly said no. I would say he is not the fighter of the decade. So then they asked me, who did I have as a pick? And what did I think of Tenshin Nasukawa? The way I put it on Twitter, and the way I'll say it to you guys is this. I've said it on this podcast several times before. The most important in my history of fighting and what I know of fighting and what I know of the history of Japanese Kakutugi, the most important combat sport star, like young talent, to enter anything other than boxing, unchallenged, is Tenshin Nasukawa. There is no second place. There is no play. Oh, this person also had that potential that just didn't work out. This guy stands alone as being the youngest, most skilled Kakutugi athlete that I can think of coming from Japan. As far as kickboxing, Muay Thai, MMA, this guy is the best young prospect. If you wanted to groom him for a run in the UFC at one period of time, you could do that. If you want to groom him to be the poster child of a combat sports organization, you could do that. He is the key to Japan kickboxing future, period. You know, because of his age, you know, because he's so young, he is the guy who you'll be talking about for the next 10 years. So in the way that I talked about Masaki Nori, Masaki Nori is a super talent, and he did show signs of it really, really young. But he didn't show what Tenshin Nasukawa showed. You know, Tenshin Nasukawa is the kind of person that could see something in a movie and then try it. Masaki Nori is the kind of person who the game that he played with and the skill that he got as far as the step knees, his low kick game, and so on, he just developed it to being a very, very awesome fighter at the highest level. Like, he developed it. But he still is a guy who plays smart, who's very intelligent, who has really good kickboxing skill. But as far as the crossover appeal, that's something you're born with or not born with, he has got good tools. He doesn't have great tools in the way that Tenshin Nasukawa has. But, of course, you guys know, Sakinori is my son, so I still think that he is, in the long run, going to have a better resume than Tenshin Nasukawa. So when you look back on it, you'll be like, who had the best resume of these two? I think that there's going to be a really strong argument that Masaki Nori beat more elite people at the end of his run. But Tenshin Nasukawa, who's going to do MMA, he's going to go against some elite guys in MMA, who's going to do kickboxing in Muay Thai, and he's going to run against elite guys there, he's not going to stay undefeated forever. But he is doing a great job right now. He had the showcase thing with Mayweather, which, you know, I mean, it was stupid to do. I mean, he goes against guys 30 pounds bigger than him, but it just shows that his star power, people wanted to put this thing together, and they did put it together. And he is a talent and a figure that we will be talking about for a long time, but he is in the first act of what is going to be his career. He's special. He is a special talent, and we've only seen the beginning. Everything that you know of him, everything that you've seen from him, is the first act of what is his career. Now, again, we're hoping that act number two is awesome, you know, but we still haven't, you know, had the outside things that come into play with him. For all I know, he marries a movie star, you know what I'm saying? For all I know, he develops a drug habit. For all I know, he, you know, becomes a, you know, born-again Christian and starts doing mission work. For all I know, he, you know, decides he wants to just be a teacher. And, like you don't know what's coming from people in their fight career. In our minds, we think, oh, all they're going to do and all they're going to focus on is being the best fighter in the world, and that's where their path leads. But kids come into play, you know what I'm saying? Family comes into play, you know, a loss of a loved one. So many things happen in these fighters' lives, and we don't know what's going to happen in part two, three, four. The first part is an awesome part. We've got this amazing athlete who can do anything. I mean, he is a karate movie out there, and he gets into exchanges, and he tries things, and he can win with techniques that just seem unreal. He crosses all the marks of what I look for in a great fighter. The consistency of winning against elite-level people, and the ability to score clean, effective offense no matter what style you go against. And number three, something that stretches the imagination, something that goes outside of the realm of what I think can happen in fighting. Those are the three tools that I look for that make someone great in all sports, in all combat sports. That's what I'm looking for. Those three things. Consistency, of course, in the win-loss record. The ability to land clean offense against whatever style you go against, meaning no matter what comes in front of you, you still got the ability to land your offense. And number three, what gets you out? Something that is, you know, like the mousetrap move that everybody calls for the armbar victory that you got from Demetrius Johnson, or the Roman Majowski flying kicks. Like this, it's not just that you're winning. You're doing things that I didn't think was possible to do in a fight. And the imagination part is a big key in making you all-time great. Now, again, a natural charisma and all that stuff comes into play as far as being a star, but as far as what makes you an all-time great and elite, those are the tools that I look for. Tenshin Nasukawa checks every box there. He really, really is a super talent. But we are in Act 1, and I'm curious to see what happens down the road. You know, I remember when, you know, Kid Yamamoto doing it in both boxing and you know, both kickboxing and MMA, he's doing great, did some great things, got a chance to fight UFC towards the end of his career. But I remember he had that period of time where he was with that girl. I can't think of her name. She was like an actress. She was really pretty. They got a kid together, and then they were together. I remember people were saying, like, hey, she's a different personality. They're going to be divorced. And they did end up getting divorced. But, like, that comes into play. You know what I'm saying? One of the K-1 fighters is dating a porn star right now, if I remember correctly. That kind of stuff comes into play. I don't know that part of the second act for him. You know what I'm saying? All I know right now is the guy who gets out there and fights people is a killer. And I want to see that guy as much as I can. While we're on the subject, I will be doing a long podcast, and I'll probably be putting a fight highlight together for it for the best, I guess, I won't say for the best, but for my pick for all-decade team. I'll go ahead and say, hey, at this weight class, and I'll let you guys vote on it, but I think I might go four people in every weight class and decide who is the best on the all-time team from 2010 to 2019, so that when people look back at this era, when they decide to look at film of kickboxing, those names will come up. So I'll put them out there. I'll make an argument for it. I'll probably put a long podcast series together for it. I might start off next year just doing the podcast each week on, you know, of course, I'll be doing the regular action, but I might focus on a weight class for those weeks of why people in those weight classes are great for the 20 to 2019 decade. Like, I think I will put the time into breaking it down so that when you guys are old and you play that podcast and you're like, okay, these are the people to sit down and put into our whatever the viewing device is in the future. And the future is probably going to be like stuck in our eye or something like that, whatever. But anyways, that's my podcast show. I'm glad to get back to you guys. I apologize if there's any action that I missed, but I really want to get back into talking about some of the questions that people brought up on Twitter. That's something that I'm going to bring up on a regular basis when I start to see some consistency as far as some of the conversations that we're in. Another one that came up just lightly, and I will bring it up. there was M Legend. Someone had mentioned that to me about them and their fight cards. And I said, hey, they're doing an all right job. And then someone was like, no, I want them to die. You know, like, they pretty much brought up this idea, and I said, hey, they put on good fights here and there. They've got a weird person who runs their social media account, though, because their conversion from Chinese to English makes a lot of their posts look a little bit weird. But I think it was Cobra Core. I apologize if I'm wrong there, but I think it was Cobra Core. First of all, I need to apologize because he said something as a joke that I thought he meant serious. So I want to apologize to Cobra Core there. But later he and I got into a conversation and we're talking about the organizations. And he said, I would rather all of those organizations go away and there just be one organization in China. Well, the best fights will happen if it's just under one banner. But because, you know, the country's so big and there's so much talent, you know, there's people popping up. And of course, there's not a lot of TV channels in China. So if you get on a station, you're going to get a lot of views for whatever you put out there. Someone cracked a Yi Long joke, but it should be noted, because he was on TV, he's probably the highest paid fighter in China as far as kickboxing goes. And he's not even remotely close to being the best Chinese kickboxer. It's just kind of how time and space happened for him and character and gimmick and all that stuff. But the argument that was being made was, do we need to get rid of those organizations and just have one organization? Because he is right. You know, Quan Jingling, our QGL, very, very good. Wei Ru, very, very good. Those are talented guys. We want to see those guys fight the highest level against really good opposition on a regular basis. We want to see them fight the best. But because they're all in different organizations and they're all with different managements and they're all on different channels, we don't always get to see the best. Rarely do you get to see best Chinese fighter versus best Chinese fighter sometimes, you know, just because you want to put them against international guys and prove the might of Chinese kickboxing. If I were to have an MVP for which country had the best kickboxing from 2010 to 2019, China would be up there because they were a non-factor in 2000 to 2009. Like, you would not have brought them up. So they are doing good things. They are producing good athletes. But that question of, is it good for the sport as a whole if our best guys aren't fighting other best guys and if they're not fighting regular enough for us to see it? So it comes into play. So shout out to you, Cobra Core, for bringing that up to me and for all the guys who I talk to on a regular basis who make kickboxing great. Like, I am grateful for you guys for the questions and for, you know, Alex Jensen, shout out to him, who brought up the thing with Urina Bears. I wanted to spend a little bit more time on it just because he mentioned it on Twitter. I really, really want to focus on the athletes and what makes them good and what gives them opportunities. And the situation in China, it does keep A from fighting B sometimes. So it comes up. So I will, for the second time, wrap the show up. Thank you guys all for listening. Grateful to have you. And I will post when it happens for me to be on that other social media outlet. As far as hosting the podcast, I will let you guys know how that goes. And on Monday, this coming Monday, will be the official episode 300. And I will do a good breakdown. I've already got my notes all written out here of the 25 things that every kickboxing fan must do, must see, must understand before they die. So I've got 25, and then I've got, you know, 10 things that I would have liked to have seen. So it's going to be a fun podcast, but it's the kind of podcast where if you didn't know anything about kickboxing, it's the podcast to listen to. So this is the one that you're going to want to pass to your friends and spread around. Like, this is the one. So that's coming Monday, on Monday's podcast. So thank everybody for listening. I'm in Chicago as we speak for the Glory event coming up, the Double Glory event. So I might talk about that a little bit this coming up on Monday. But the biggest thing is my podcast will be focused on the stars of tomorrow. Okay, it will be focused on the stars of the past and what they did to put us in this position. Thanks everybody for listening. God bless. Have a good one. Peace.